Welcome to the Food Talk Show with Lucy Ellis and Guy Routledge. So it's welcome to the Food Talk Show with Lucy Ellis and Guy. How are you, Guy?
Very well, thanks, Lucy. How are you doing today?
Yeah, good, thank you. We're missing Sue today, though, aren't we?
We are. I have no idea where she's gone. I'm sure she'll be full of stories next week with all sorts of interesting things to tell. But we've got a fantastic show for you guys this week. We have two wonderful guests in the studio. We have Sophie Harvey from Soffel's Pitta Chips.
Hi there.
Hello. And we have Joe Ben from Ugly Drinks.
Hey.
And he's bought some delicious drinks for us to try. And I believe Sophie has bought some delicious pitta chips for us to try.
We've got a lovely table, haven't we?
Yes, a big, nice big spread in front of us. A wonderful afternoon of tasting delicious things yet again. So where should we start? Lucy, I hear you've been off doing interesting things and talking about protein recently.
I have, yes. I went to the Future Protein Seminar last week, I think it was, up at the Crystal, just by Victoria Dark. And yeah, it was really, really interesting.
So was it full of bodybuilders and muscle
no,
men
thank
and
God.
People pumping iron and all that kind of stuff?
I would have felt quite intimidated if it was. No, there was some really interesting people there. It ranged from sort of like your university lecturers to Matt Havers. He was there from Peck Drinks. I don't know if you come across Matt before.
Rings a bell, but it's still early, so I think
he's been developing a protein drink made out of egg. We had him on the show a good few months ago now, but it's really nice to catch up. Yeah, really nice to catch up with him and see how his journey's going and everything.
Fantastic.
There was all sorts going on.
So this is the future of protein, isn't it? It's not just like whey in a powder that have after you've done your workout. It's all about the new and interesting kinds of ingredients and how we can look at getting our protein from all sorts of different sources. Things like the insects, I guess there was quite a bit of stuff about that. Some of this lab-grown meat. It's a really interesting world out there when it comes to all of that kind of stuff. And everybody around me is nodding, going, yes, interesting kind of stuff.
That's the thing, because they're basically saying that meat's not sustainable enough to feed everyone. So
yeah, it's a big, big issue.
Exactly. So they're looking at sort of insects and how can we get our protein from other sources. And quite interestingly, we don't eat that much beef.
We, you and I think I eat quite a lot of beef, unfortunately.
I probably eat quite a bit as well, but us as a nation, we don't actually eat that much beef. Chicken is our choice. Personally,
well, that was something that's something that we saw from our chat with Ollie Lloyd from Great British Chefs a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about that foodie survey that they did, and chicken was certainly at the top of the list in terms of the most popular protein sources, I guess, consumed. Mm. But yeah, lots of interesting things coming to the market in the future, in all sorts of different shapes and sizes,
especially the insects.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. We must get a catch up on how Harry's insect diet went. Did he ever do it?
He's starting on the 24th of April.
Ah, fantastic.
So he's got all of his diets lined up and his drawers full of bugs. and we actually bumped into Eat Grub as well last week because Harry came with me. So he had a good chat with us as well. So it's nice to hear what he was doing.
Fantastic. Well, we have these lovely people in the studio with us, so we should probably start having a chat to them. Let's start off with Sophie. Would you like to tell us a little bit about your product and your story, how it came to be?
Yes, so it was something that I started making at home a few years ago, just for friends, as a beer snack. So just sort of started roasting pita chips with fresh ingredients, and then we'd always just have them with our beers and dips. Exactly. It's always been about that. So
we haven't got any beer here today, unfortunately.
No,
so.
But we've got Ugly Drinks, so it's just as good, maybe, I think.
A match made in heaven.
Yeah. and so from that, it was just a bit of a hobby. So I started sort of doing a design for a bag, a logo, and kind of just sort of just making stories, going to local pubs, and kind of set up a business on a very sort of small scale. And it just all kind of went from there, really. And it's sort of now we're producing them in a bit of a different way. So we're making the pitta ourselves rather than I just used to buy it in and then roast it that way. It's all fresh ingredients that we use. So it's fresh spring onion, fresh cheese. It all gets mixed into the dough and then oven roasted with olive oil. So it's all natural and just sort of very simple ingredients. But then, just delicious. And good with the dips and beers.
Fantastic. And so you have a range of, there's three different flavours at the moment that you've got?
So three flavours. So there's
two variations.
Yeah. So rosemary and thyme, spring onion and cheese, and then chili and garlic mild. And then we've got chili and garlic wild that's super spicy. So
that's a great name.
I really
like
those two.
Yeah. I came across these. I think I was at an event. I think it was a Cinnamon Bridge event a few, it must have been before Christmas. And they were there with a whole load of other bits and pieces. And I picked up a bag of these, the wild chili and garlic ones. And my God, they've got a real kick to them. They're fantastic.
Yeah. Super spicy. So that was the first flavour that that I was making. And when I was sort of taking them around to the pubs and things, people were like, oh, they're nice, but they're just too hot. So then we were like, okay, we don't want to lose the wild because, you know, that's the ones that we're into. But then we did the mild ones as well. So then you had the wild and mild. So that was the first flavour, chili and garlic, mild and wild. And then that was it. Mm. And then came from there the other flavours after that.
Fantastic. And I guess that's where we're at now. You have all the, you know, the nice packages on the shelves. You're stocked in a few different places. But it started off, like you said, in a very kind of humble beginnings, you know. So was it something that you were making at home, or can you tell us a little bit about where it all started?
Yeah. So from just, doing it for fun in the kitchen, when I started to stock, I think one of my first kind of real stockists was the Royal College of Art. So in their kind of art bar. So they would order like 100 bags a week and I'd be like, ooh, like at the weekend, like,
and like so you made them all by hand, did you?
Yeah, and just so I had these sort of hand sealable bags, so I'd just be in the kitchen and then just sealing them. But it was a really good way to sort of mock up a sort of, almost like a pretend business, you know, just kind of starting it right. Okay, what do I need now? I need to get like a little invoice book, or I need this and that, and just kind of doing it that way. And then as I started to get more stockists, like pubs and just kind of independent, sort of mainly in the Hackney area where I was living, we renovated our garden shed. So I've had sort of my ovens in there, and then I just used to get in there sort of for hours and hours.
I think I was reading somewhere that you used to work at a gallery, right?
Yeah,
so that's it. And you would work all day, and then from like 7 in the evening until 2, 3 in the morning, you'd be in your shed making pita bread chips.
Yeah, that was it. So I was just
living the dream, isn't it, Lucy?
Yeah, I know, I thought I was. But it was just, I think when you're excited about something, it was so exciting to have orders and, you know, to know that people are buying them kind of week after week, that it sort of gives you that energy to be like, right, I've got to make, however many hundreds of bags like this week, sort of around my job. And then I used to just cycle them around to the pub sort of on my lunch break or after work, or, you know, just sort of, all around the clock. So it was always feeling a bit kind of jet lagged because I was so sort of, just working so much.
The body clock is running at both ends of this.
That's it. But then, so then from that, I set it up in a factory in Tottenham. So that kind of allowed for, no more sort of hand packing. They had equipment there that I could pack everything on. And I started buying kind of equipment that just made everything a bit more automated and just wasn't so hand done. So, and then that kind of got it to the next stage where then we could start working with distributors and sort of start sort of pushing it in a different kind of way rather than on the bike.
Exactly.
So just because I met you last year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
At Hotel Olympia.
Yeah, that's it.
And that was, what would you say, probably around about March, April time?
Yeah, so that would have been a year ago.
Yeah.
So that's
it. Just sort of explain, because I can't get over how well you've done in that little space of time. So a year ago, just explain where you were.
So, a year ago, I was basically making it all myself alone. And then just sort of had some help from the people in the factory that I would just kind of pay them to use
smile
their time.
Smile nicely.
Kind of well, that kind of way. So, but that was sort of, the Hotel Olympia was kind of like the start of actually turning it into a business. So I think I'd left my job sort of a year and a half, 2 years ago, sort of fully.
That's the scary part, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't too bad because I think you're just ready, aren't you, to do it? And I'd been working, gone freelance for a while anyway. So I was kind of sort of stepping out from kind of working for somebody else anyway. So it was kind of a slow kind of shift. So from there, now we're producing the whole product. So all of the pita, we make it in a different way. So we have shelf life. So at that time, I think we only had sort of 3 months shelf life, where now we have 6 months shelf life.
Brilliant.
And it's sort of all of those kind of little things that then it means that you can actually start getting it out there, because shelf life can be like the biggest problem because, you know,
especially if you're distributing, you're selling to some of the supermarkets and stuff now, or some of the small retailers, then, you know, sometimes they'll sit on stuff for a while, and, you know, takes a while to shift it all. So I guess that can become a real bottleneck, and then you end up with wastage, which is a real shame.
And also just, you know, you never want to give some stock to somebody that's only got, you know, a month or so, because especially if they're, you know, a smaller retailer or whatever, you know, it just doesn't work at all. So once we kind of got over that, that really helped. And just then, sort of last summer, they were introduced to selected Waitrose. So that was a really kind of big thing to, you know, something always had hoped for and kind of dreamed about when I was in my shed, kind of cutting up. And you definitely think that it will happen, because otherwise, you know, you wouldn't be doing it. But then also, at the same time, like, it's not that realistic.
Cutting up Peter in the garden.
And then it does, you know, things take time. So, you know, and then it did happen. So it's so that's, you know, a really good thing to have happened. And then now also we've introduced them into Ocado, which is great because it's the same, you know, they're great in the pubs and in the breweries and so on, but they're great at home with dips, cheese, beers.
Especially
they kind of
with people entertaining so much more at home
party
now.
Food, yeah. Exactly. That's kind of how we always have it with your drinks, with your dips, your cheese. So it's really good to have that opportunity to have it available for people to be able to bring into their home rather than just kind of single serving out and about.
Fantastic. I think we should have a taste.
I do as well. Yes.
We might have to do a bit of rustling temporarily. And while Lucy's doing some rustling, hopefully it's not too loud. I mean, one of the things that strikes me, it's an amazing story, you know, from just having an idea which came from somewhere. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about that in the future. And it was just, it sounds like you kind of staged it in bit by bit. It's like, you know, I've had this idea. I guess the momentum was originally that, you know, people were enjoying them, right? So you got some really good feedback, and that kind of spurred you on to the next step and the next step.
Definitely. I think it's all just because it was never really intentional to be, you know, sort of setting up a business. It was more that, you know, I'll just do this now and I'll, you know, this is the kind of next way of doing it. So, yeah, it's definitely been kind of a very kind of organic way, whether that's a good thing or, you know, I think there's pros and cons with that. But
sometimes it can be really difficult to, like, you know, nobody can see the future, right? So you can't say that, you know, this is the plan and these are all the steps. I'm going to map it all out in advance. I guess you kind of have to take it as it comes a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and taste one of these without munching too loud directly into the microphone.
Away from the microphone.
Sorry, guys, I'm just munching. Just don't mind me.
They're so crunchy, though, so they can be quite
really
noisy.
Nice.
This was a terrible idea for the radio.
Absolute hardest snack of all time to eat quietly.
Yeah.
But it's one of those, it's a little bit like the whole Pringles. Once you pop, you just can't stop. I can imagine eating that massive bag myself.
Yeah, because I've got, so we, in front of us, we've got a couple of different flavours. We've got two different sizes of bags. And you were saying before we started recording that you've developed this new larger bag. Mm. Is that for like Waitrose and Ocado and that kind of thing?
Yeah, that was it. So that was when we were speaking with the buyer from Waitrose, you know, that was the format that she wanted for Waitrose, so that was kind of how that one came about, and we'd wanted to do it, but that was the push to kind of actually get it happening. So
even my son would love these in his lunch.
What, the spicy ones?
Not the spicy one. I'm just about to dare guy to have one, but
I love a bit of spicy.
The cheese
I'll
ones.
Send them around.
Thanks, Joe.
I can imagine that being a really nice lunchtime snack for him.
Yeah, so I mean, when we do some of the festivals where, yeah, there's kids, lots of kids around, especially sort of they like the cheesy ones. So that's because it's a bit kind of a mini cheddar-ish.
Yeah.
That's the kind of similar, but then it's, you know, something that's completely natural. So it's nice for parents because they know that they can give it to them, that it isn't, you know, powder flavours and preservatives and things. So it's definitely sort of a good choice all round because it's, you know, the ingredients are so simple. So it's all ingredients that you recognise and, you know, you have at home. So it's got a big kind of bonus on that front.
Delicious. And even the chili one. They've got a nice kind of heat that comes at the end, you know. It's not too spicy when you first kind of bite into it. But
and then once you have a few of them,
it really kind of warms your mouth up.
Yeah, so we use fresh Scotch bonnets for
them. That's a pretty hot chili, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's why that kind of, it's got that taste and the lasting taste. So.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
Yeah.
And so there's no kind of, all the ingredients are natural, right?
Yeah.
And something that I think is also a bit different about these is that they're baked rather than fried, is that right?
Exactly. So, yeah, oven roasted.
Right. And so is that something that you kind of intentionally started off with? We're like, right, we're going to try and make something which is all natural, and it is kind of, I don't know if you could call them healthy, because they are, you know, they've got, I guess they've got quite a bit of oil and stuff in them, but maybe more, certainly healthier than, you know, your classic bag of, you know, well-known brand crisps on the shelf.
Yeah, I mean, because they're oven roasted and they've not been deep fried, I think they're sort of, I think around sort of 30 to 50% less fat than crisps, so a really good choice to have because it's not been saturated, and so there isn't so much in there. But in terms of, yeah, it was because it was something just making at home. It's, you know, the cooking that you do at home is always very healthy and fresh ingredients. So it was just kind of making things how you would make it yourself if you were cooking for yourself, which would be definitely not adding anything.
And I guess that makes sense because that's how they started. You cook them yourself in the shed or, you know, wherever it was. And, you know, it's all that just kind of that natural approach to, you know, good quality stuff done well.
And just good ingredients.
Fantastic.
Really, I was just thinking it's probably a good idea that Sue's not here for the chili, for the wild ones, because she's not, she does like chili, but she's a bit of a wimp really when it comes to chili, but they are absolutely delicious, the wild ones.
We'll save some for her and we'll catch her out
a
later.
A nice dip, guacamole.
Yeah, cool it down, tzatziki, another good one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we always advise tzatziki with the wild ones, so... But yeah, they can be a bit of a shock sometimes for people. So.
I was just down in loads of water while you were talking and hiding my secret coughs.
So what's next, Sophie? With the brand, are you looking to add new flavors? Are you looking to add different kind of products? Is there anything that you can kind of tell us, Food Talk exclusive style?
Yeah, so we will be doing more flavors, but it's sort of just in the thought. At the moment, we're going to be doing sort of our own hummus as well for all our events, because we do so many events. So we use chickpea hummus, who I told you about, which is great. So we always use her hummus, and then we're also going to have our own hummus as well alongside that, because it goes so nicely. So that's sort of our main focus at the moment, and just really trying to, like, we've just had our launch in Ocado, so really trying to work with them, and we're just continually working with all the different breweries that we work with. So because it's summertime, you know, everybody's at the tap rooms, in the warehouse car parks, you know, enjoying themselves with all their
beers.
Depends
what part of London you live in,
yeah.
I guess.
So we've got sort of a lot of beer festivals happening, and just kind of, yeah, we're up in Leeds sort of for the Easter holiday doing a couple of beer festivals up there, and just really sort of sticking with that sort of promotion and just being out and about with our truck. Bringing our chips
with your
to
truck,
everyone. Yeah.
Is it, I'm assuming it's not some kind of massive 7-tonner
you drive around. It's completely the opposite. It's you know, like a tuk-tuk, a little three-wheeler. So it's
very
a Piaggio.
Cute.
Yeah. So
you went from your bicycle to
upgraded. So, but that's it was a delivery truck, and now more for events. And we do some deliveries as well, but. It's just, really good for the event. So she gets out and about.
And the event, I guess, is a great way to get out and to, you know, spread the word about the brand. I mean, I guess you are in a few different places, so people come across them. But is that a big part of, you know, getting the word out and you know, increasing the, you know, the awareness and getting the feedback, I guess, as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, being out and about, getting the chance just for people to sample it is massive. So, you know, people, whenever you're doing things, people are like, oh, I've seen these, or, oh, yeah, I've seen these in the pub, and then, but I've never tried them. Then they try it, they're like, oh. So it's just having that connection. And I think just also being able to, just highlighting yourself, that, you know, you've got your style, you've got your truck, you've got your, you know, brand, and you can, you know, bring across your music or whatever you want to kind of express. You can do it all when you've got that opportunity of sampling and being at events. So,
yeah, I guess all of that stuff is so important, isn't it? I mean, you know, the idea of starting a food brand is so alluring. I mean, I'm sure that, I myself had this, and I'm sure many of the listeners as well, you know, oh, it'd be fantastic. You know, one day I'll just be, sipping drinks on the beach, having, you know, made my millions with food. But, it, you know, there's so many things involved, isn't there? Not just the making of the chips, but then all of the manufacturing, the distribution, and the brand building and all of that as well.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it must be so rewarding. Right.
Yeah. And I think to have, you know, there's so much kind of the hours and the hard work, but then, you know, you have this plus side of all the social side and all the people that you meet, the events you get to go to, and being so creative with a brand, or, you know, and just sort of who people that you'd like to work with, or you know, all kind of comes together that it makes it sort of really enjoyable, the whole thing.
Fantastic.
really lovely.
Mm, indeed. I think I need to go off and have a bit more of a munch. Yeah. So we'll take a short break and then we'll come back to the studio.
I'm here with Brady Last.
Hello.
And we've just been visited by the lovely Simon from Baker's Bicycle Breads.
Good morning.
So, Simon, how are you?
Really good, thank you. Yeah, excellent.
And we've actually been treated because they're just about to launch their new products. Simon, can you tell me a little bit about sort of what it is, what it's called?
Yeah, so as you say, it's Baker's Bicycle. It's a completely new concept to the market. So effectively, it's frozen, fully baked, artisan, hand-finished breads that we're going to be selling to the general public. So, yeah.
Exciting. Well, we're just in quite a small room at the moment, and the smell is absolutely amazing, isn't it, Brady?
Yeah, absolutely. Bread just evokes so many memories, doesn't it, for people? So I think every time you smell bread, you just feel happy, don't you? So I'm really smiling at the moment.
So am I. So we're going to have a little taste as well. But Simon, can you tell us a bit more about the brand? How long? Because you've been there. It's quite a recent thing, isn't it? It's not like you've been there for years and years. So can you just tell me a bit more about, a bit more background about you, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So the bakery itself, I joined last year, so about 7 months ago. But the bakery itself has been around since 1994. So it's been going for quite a long time over in sunny Margate. And in that time, basically, it's been supplying mostly into the food service industry, so into restaurants, hotels, bars. And when I joined the business last year, I was getting phone calls every week, emails from people saying, where can we actually buy your breads from? I'm really sorry, but you just can't buy them at the moment. So we came up with this idea of creating a new sort of side to the business, which was selling frozen, fully baked artisan breads into people in their homes. So we're doing that via a number of concessions, which we're opening in sort of garden centre food halls, premium farm shops, independent supermarkets. And that's the idea behind it, really. We've got a huge issue in this country anyway with food wastage. It's a massive, massive problem. I'm sure you've talked about it many times. But there's a recent figure that's been quoted by Tesco, which is that 44% of all bread in the UK is wasted. Mm. So almost half of the bread that is baked off in the UK is ending up in the bin, which is just criminal.
No, definitely. I just want to interrupt there. Have you heard of a company called Tastedale?
I have heard the name, yes. Not completely fully aware, but I have heard the name. It's sort of...
Basically, what they do is they, out of all that wasted breads, so they've got loads of relationships with different bakeries, they make beer out of the bread. So I'll definitely
put... good use for it. Bread is probably the best thing, but beer is probably second best. So yeah.
Exactly.
I was just going to say, I imagine a lot of that bread that gets thrown away probably isn't very good quality, and that's part of the problem, isn't it? I guess... part of what you do is having real passion for developing something that's real, and it is a real bread that who's going to throw that away? Nobody. How important is that part of the journey for you to make sure something was really authentic?
Yeah, that's absolutely essential for us. So I could bore people silly with sort of like the Chorley Wood method, which is the way that sort of the mass-produced sort of plant bakery bread is sort of made with. But the way that we produce bread is basically how it used to be made. So hence why we've called it the Baker's Bicycle, really, is we wanted to evoke some of that nostalgia in terms of this is what bread used to taste like before people started messing around with it. And as somebody... I go to France every year on sort of camping holidays, and I love eating bread when I'm in France. And it feels as though we should be proud of our British bread as well. And at the moment, I don't really feel as though we can be proud of a lot of the bread that's sold in supermarkets. But our breads are fantastic. So we don't have any preservatives in there at all because of it's frozen. The freezing process is doing that job for us. And then basically we use 100% British wheat. So we're Red Tractor assured, so that's all coming from British fields across the country. Some of those are very close to the bakery. In our ciabatta and focaccia, instead of using olive oil, we use extra virgin rapeseed oil, and that's coming from a great company called Kentish Oils, and they're based literally sort of 5 miles down the road. We can sort of walk there from the bakery. So, yeah, it's bringing the best of sort of British food together into one product, I think, which is fantastic.
So we're just about to try some. So we've got the most beautiful, I just can't say how happy I am about this, the most beautiful bread in front of us, and it looks like it's got cranberries in. Simon, which bread is this?
Yeah, so this is called our cranberry pan rustic. So again, it's hand finished. We're using this one a bulk fermented sponge, we call it, which doesn't sound sort of particularly exciting, but it is for sort of us bread nuts. So we've got basically a dough that we make up that's fermented then for 24 to 48 hours. It's a light rye dough. And then we take in a portion of that, and that goes into the sort of the main bread mix. So you end up with a bread that's full of flavour. It's got a really nice aroma to it, and you get this really nice open texture. And then we've packed it full with cranberries as well, so you get a really nice sing. So this is sort of like with a you know sort of nice thick slice of turkey in there is just beautiful, really really nice.
Well, I'm gonna have a bit. Yeah, Brady, are you gonna join me?
Yes, I am.
Oh, with Mmm.
I'm really surprised the cranberries are still so juicy, aren't they? Not, I thought they'd be more dried. It's like a real flavour.
The process sort of really helps to maintain that. So we, an important part of what we do is we freeze the bread straight from the oven. So they literally, they come out of the oven, they go straight into a cooling tunnel, chilled, frozen as quickly as possible. So it locks all of that freshness in. So as soon as you thaw it out, you know, it tastes exactly like fresh bread. So we get people quite regularly sort of say, well, you know, that's not fresh bread. You know, that's not frozen bread, sorry. You know, you've baked that off just now. And it's like, no, honestly, we haven't. And it's quite a job sometimes to convince people that we haven't sort of baked it off sort of that morning.
I feel like I'm eating fresh breads now. I would never have guessed that it's been frozen or... And it's just absolutely beautiful, isn't it? The texture, the everything about it.
It tastes like you want it to taste. Mm. It is everything I hoped it would be. I think the appetite for bread is, excuse the pun, is still really, really high. Most households still buy it. I think most people still eat it, so...
Yeah, I think sort of bread, as I was saying earlier, with the sort of reputation for British bread, I think it's suffered somewhat over the years. You know, other countries have always been very proud of their bread heritage, and I don't think we've really had that so much. So we're really keen to bring that back to the fore. And I think when you're eating bread that's this sort of quality, then you don't mind. And I know everyone has sort of no carb days and things, but when you're on a carb day and you want to treat yourself, then you're best doing that with really good quality bread rather than something that's, you know, that's not had the love and attention gone into it that our breads have.
Exactly. I spoke to someone the other day and they were saying how she's stick thin, she's got no weight issues or anything like that, and she was asking for advice on how to avoid carbs. And I said to her, why would you want to avoid carbs? Why would you want to do something like that? And it was because everyone had been telling her how bad carbs are for you. But she's quite active. She goes out. She eats bread every day, potatoes at dinner time. And it was just this. And I said to her, it's not the carbs. It's the bread that you're, like, the different breads, basically. And if you've got a really nice, good quality with no additives like you get in the sort of supermarket bread that can sometimes last for about 2.5-3 weeks, can't
yes.
it?
Yes. You know that there's something in there that you probably wouldn't really like in there when bread's lasting for 2.5 weeks. But I'm more passionate about bread than your average person. but when, you know, when people talk about sort of, you know, I'm not going to eat bread anymore because I'm on a diet and things. I think there's something gone seriously wrong here, because if bread is one of these staple foods that's been in existence for thousands of years, and therefore how can that be wrong? You know, that should make up a good portion of your healthy diet. It just absolutely should. So I find it really bizarre that it's become the sort of, you know, one of the latest evil foods. we're not selling sort of cigarettes and things here. We're selling bread that's wholesome. You know, it's made with really good quality ingredients. That's got to be a good thing. If we're putting good things into it, you've got to expect that that's doing good things for your body.
Exactly. One other thing I'm really interested in is the name behind it. So we've just got the most beautiful packaging, which I can't imagine anyone would want to throw away after they've actually eaten the breads. But it's the Baker's Bicycle, Artisan Bakehouse Company. So can you tell us a little bit more about how you came up with the name and a bit more about the branding, please?
Yeah, so we it's really difficult. I don't know whether you've ever tried to come up with a name for a business before, but my God, it's hard. You know, it's really difficult trying to sort of come up with something that epitomises everything that you're trying to do. So we came up with a few different names. I commute over to Margate every day through lovely sort of Kentish countryside. And we wanted originally to have a bit of sort of Kent in there. So we were sort of thinking of names that of things that I came across on my daily commute. So that mostly was things like oast houses, dead badgers. I come across quite a lot, but
that probably wouldn't make the best name, would it? Dead Badger Bread.
No, Dead Badger Bakery hasn't got quite the ring to it that we wanted. So then we looked at Pheasant Bakery and a few others, but it was actually Yvonne, who does a lot of our sort of marketing and HR for us, that sort of came up with the final name, Baker's Bicycle. And it just seemed to capture everything that we wanted. It was, as you said, it was of a time. It captures a bit of that heritage of sort of, you know, bread in days gone by, which we pride ourselves on the fact that our bread is made how bread used to be made, which is great for us. Also, I'm a keen cyclist, although you can't tell that from my waistline at the moment. But
it's only just spring, so I'll let you off.
Yeah, by the end of the summer, I'll be about 6 stone. But it sort of combines quite a lot of things together, which worked really well for us. And as you said, it's basically the logo is sort of taken inspiration from the sort of logos that you used to get on the front of bicycles in sort of years gone by, so the Rallies and the Bianchis. It looks absolutely perfect. As soon as we sort of saw the final design, we went, that's absolutely spot on. That's exactly what we wanted.
Oh, brilliant. Well, I'm definitely going to be heading down to Dobby's, especially as it's only around the corner from me at the weekend. But thank you so much. And can we tuck into one of your new Skiosh buns, please? Yeah. Just as Simon's cutting this new Skiosh, the colour is just beautiful, isn't it? It's like a sort of yellow golden
butter, the colour of butter, which obviously I imagine is where the colour comes from.
A fair bit of butter in there. I was in the bakery the other week making these, and I could feel my sort of heart rate slowing down as you're making them. But they're beautiful. It's a bit of a holy grail product, really, that in all my years in bakery, trying to find a really good quality, fully baked, frozen scone is just impossible. I mean, they're all dreadful. They're dry, you know, they've got no flavour to them. They're really bad. Our brioche is award-winning, so we thought, well, let's take our brioche recipe, pack it full of fruit, take the yeast out, add a bit of baking powder, remove the salt, and then, you know, end up with something like this, which Stuart, who does our MPD for us, I mean, he came sort of running into my office in the afternoon to show me this, and it's just amazing, and it tastes fantastic. So, yeah, we've got a little bit of clotted cream to add.
I'm getting really excited. The clotted cream, which is probably one of my most favourite things ever. I'm really a bit obsessed with cream at the moment. Oh, it's just... Have you heard of Pinkster gin?
No. I must confess, I'm not really part of the big sort of gin craze, but my wife quite likes it. So.
Well, you should definitely introduce your wife to... They've just created a gin jam. So what they do is their gin, Pinkster, is infused with raspberries. So they started off doing these boozy berries, jars of the boozy berries, which is the berries that came from the gin. And then they've just realised they've still got leftover products. So what they're doing now is with the, I think it's the berries that are on the bottom, they're using that to make jam now.
Sounds good. Yeah, that sounds fantastic.
So that just revolutionises cream teas.
Okay, there you go. Have a try of that.
That is absolutely amazing. Just you've still got the scone feel to it, haven't you? Like, yeah, but it's not as dry.
Yeah, it's got a bit of the scone texture, but yeah, as you said, it's not as dry. So you've still got a bit of moisture in there. You can taste the butter in it as well. It just everything works together in it so well. I think, you know, scones have been around for donkeys, but this is sort of this is next generation scone. This is sort of scone 2.0. It's it's the future. I think.
This is the new cream tea, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, we're really excited about these. I think it's time for a change, I think. Afternoon tea is just huge everywhere, isn't it? Everyone's into afternoon teas. And it just gives people that something that's different. And it fills a gap that's in the market as well, which I think is great. So
all of these going to be stocked at Dobby's? All of them?
Yeah, so there's eight different products in the boxed range. And then we've also partnered with a viennoiserie supplier called Gourmand, who are based in Belgium. And they're doing sort of the viennoiserie side for us. We're not experts in that, so we're better off partnering with somebody who does that really well. So all of the breads are from us and in the boxes, and then the viennoiserie sits alongside. So, yeah, in the range we've got we've got glazed brioche buns, we've got ciabatta rolls, sourdough and onion, olive and oregano focaccia rolls, the cranberry pan rustic, sun-dried tomato and basil focaccia loaves, and then we've got the skioche as well.
That could be the bestseller, I think.
I think so. I think I'm a keen skiosher. Yeah. Yes. So where else? So you're just about to launch and go into Dobby's, which is in Kent. Anyone else around the country? Whereabouts can they get this range from online or?
Yeah, so we've got the two Dobby's sites launching this weekend. Then we've got another week to go until we launch in McNaid's in Faversham, which is a great farm shop. And then a week after that, we open at Jempson's in Peasmarsh as well, which again is a really cracking independent supermarket. So they're absolutely the perfect outlets for us. This is, and I keep saying to sort of people that it's a trial really as much as anything. We think it's going to go really, really well, but we just want to make sure that we're getting feedback from customers in the process. And it was really important to us that we were selling this via outlets that were keen to be part of it. Dobby's, I have to say, Mel and John that we've been dealing with there have been just superb, really, really helpful and very keen to sort of give us that feedback as we go through it. And I'd encourage everyone who sort of comes to visit us, when we're doing the samplings and things, come up and have a chat with us. We'd love to get email addresses from people if they'd like to share them. We're not going to bombard them with stuff, but we'd really like to talk to people to understand what do you like, what do you dislike, and just give us some really good feedback, positive or negative. We'd love it to be positive, but the negative stuff's great to help us sort of change and improve things going forward. So
sometimes negative's even better than positive, isn't it? Because you can do something about it and people are speaking and telling you what they actually want. So
And I'm
quite
sure
a lover of from negative feedback, if that makes sense.
And I'm sure I keep waking up every morning thinking, have we forgotten something here and there's something really major that we've missed? But so far, I think we're okay. But you never know. So I'm really keen to just sort of get customers telling us what they think so that we can improve it even more from where it is.
Well, Simon, thank you so, so much for coming down to see us today.
When are you coming next?
Yeah.
I'll come down tomorrow, whenever you have me. But thanks for having me. It's really, really good.
No, you're welcome. I think we're probably going to kidnap Simon until we've finished the skioche range. So thank you very much. Okay, so welcome back. And now we're joined with Jo Benn from Ugly Drinks. Hello, Jo.
Hey.
How are you?
Really good, thank you.
So you just said to us on the break about you've been sort of out and about listening to the future of protein as well, haven't you?
Yeah, we were recently over in LA at Expo West, which is a massive food and drink show just outside, in an area called Anaheim. Huge amounts of alternative proteins out there. We were talking about Beyond Meat, and this kind of lab-grown meat.
So is that the Impossible Burger? Does that come on?
Yeah, the Impossible Burger. It's pretty interesting tasting. I was saying it tasted 95% like a burger.
I'm really jealous. It's something that we've written about a few articles on the Food Rush, and it's something that, you know, is a really hot topic at the moment. And I see these amazing looking photos of this thing that looks like a burger, and they say this is not a burger. It's made completely out of plants. And, you know, just that kind of fascination of wanting to taste that is really, really interesting.
I'm struggling to get my head around it, but I'm really intrigued.
It was definitely a popular stand. Yeah. I think everybody wanted to try
But did you say it was a drinks expo, or was it food and drink?
It's natural products, so food and drink. And I think there's technically like a kind of vitamin supplements and beauty area as well, but less interested in that.
Very good, very good. So we're going to chat all about ugly drinks now. So it would be great to kind of get from the man himself, get the overview of what makes a drink ugly.
Cool. So ugly is currently a range of two canned sparkling waters. So two flavors, lemon and lime and grapefruit and pineapple. Started it with my co-founder, Hugh Thomas, who we both met, a little bit different to Sophie, we both met whilst working in the drinks industry already. We were at Vita Coco, coconut water, and did sort of almost 4 years there, and then decided to branch off and start Ugly. And like you say, we're probably crazy calling a drink ugly, but our whole positioning from day one
It's a bold move, though, isn't it? Mm. But the packaging is very bold as well. Like I'm staring at, you know, we're almost going to taste these, and I'm looking at a couple of cans at the moment. They're bright blue with very kind of, you know, exciting patterns on them, and there's some little illustrations to, you know, to show what the ingredients are inside. So, like we say, you've got the lemon and lime, and
grapefruit and pineapple.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So the idea was, having come from within the drinks industry, we saw quite clearly that bottled water was in massive growth, and we saw that carbonated soft drinks were in were in decline, whether that was sugary soft drinks or even sweetened soft drinks. And for us, we just felt like the water category was a little bit boring. So if we could bring a little bit of the fun and the brand experience that maybe traditionally customers would get out of carbonated soft drinks, and that's what we do. And so our whole vision has been around sort of subverting people's perceptions of drinks. We've called it Ugly. It's a water product, but it's in a can. It's a fizzy drink, but it's not sweet. And that kind of underpins everything we do. And the way, hopefully as a team, the way we all kind of act day to day, we try and do things a little bit differently.
Well, it even says on the can, unsweet water, which is an interesting thing to state, because water, as far as I'm always aware, is usually unsweet anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And for us, it's about just trying to get that message across as clearly as we can. There's no sugar in it. There's no sweetener. There's nothing artificial at all. And kind of helping people understand that as best we can. So, yeah.
And that's something that you kind of initially set out to do. You were like, we can see an opportunity here. Let's, you know, disrupt the unsweet water category.
I think for us, it's about making a product that's truly healthy and exciting and tastes good, but also that's genuinely accessible. I think we saw a lot of kind of products launching, which were great and tasted amazing, but the price point just made them really difficult. I don't know about you guys, but having like a green juice habit is really expensive.
I like that expression, a green juice habit.
I always do it for about a week in January.
Right. and so it was really important to us that we could launch something that came in under a pound kind of price point, that you genuinely could pick up every single day with your lunch or in the afternoon. And that was a massive part of what we're doing. So long term, you know, we want Ugly to be stocked anywhere you see a can of well-known fizzy drink.
And how does it compare in price? I mean, I have to say, I don't think I've been into a shop and picked up a thing and handed over cash money for a long, long time. It's all done online
it's
these days.
So isn't it?
I have no idea what the price of a can of Coke is compared to the price of a can of Ugly Water.
Yeah, so a can of Coke, it depends, but it would cost roughly 79p these days.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, I know, right?
I'm getting old.
when you find out how much a Mars bar costs.
No, it used to be 25p in my local tuck shop.
I'm a little bit younger. 28 for me, but yeah.
And we aren't quite able to hit that price point yet. But we retail at 99p, which kind of puts us in line with some of those more premium cans, things like San Pellegrino cans.
Sure.
And we're kind of happy sitting at that point for now.
No, that sounds good. Should we have a bit of a taste?
All nice and cold as well, aren't
they? Nice and cold. Hopefully you can hear that nice kind of...
create our own advert, couldn't we?
I hope we haven't just blown anybody's eardrums. I do apologise.
Should we get some hunky men in?
So I've got the lemon and lime.
Get them in.
Come on.
Oh, dear, it's madness in here without Sue. She normally has us in such good control. So I've got here the lemon and lime sparkling water. And it says infused with lemon and lime. How does the infusion process work?
So we just take natural flavours from the fruit. And then so from the lemon and lime in that case. And what you'll see is like really, really subtle flavour. Mm. It's not going to blow your head off, but it hopefully just gives you that nice kind of fizzy drink feeling without any of that sweetness and sugar.
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually really nice to drink something that is fizzy without the sweetness, because you're just so used to that kind of, you know, that you get that coating in the mouth, don't you? Sort of those kind of artificial or sweet drinks. This is very refreshing.
Yeah. No, I like sort of lemon and lime drinks anyway, but I find that the normal high street ones that you can buy are just too sweet. And like Guy just said, you do get that horrible sweetener taste. Yeah.
Well, so many of them taste really artificial as well. You know, it tastes like almost like a cordial flavour, but this doesn't. This, you know, it's very
fresh.
Fresh is a good word.
Mm. Yeah, it should be really clean, and we very purposefully just made the decision to put it in cans, and we want that kind of that cold can moment to be part of the drinking experience. I think, you know, everyone craves maybe 3 p.m. in the afternoon that cold can to keep them going. Yeah. And we're saying, you know, actually you can have that without the sugar or the sweetener.
Mm. Mm, absolutely. And I bet they're great with your pita chips, Sophie.
They do. Hang on now, it's great.
A little test.
Everyone else has just kind of muted their microphone, is munching and drinking away over there. It's terrible. So, Joe, you guys have, you've only been around a very short period of time, right? It was January 2016 you launched, was it?
Yeah, so we've been around just over a year, and we were kind of relatively focused in our first sort of 12 to 15 months. So we put the product into mainly kind of top specialty retailers like Whole Foods, Planet Organic, Selfridges, and then we do a lot in food service, so particularly within offices, and especially around some of the big kind of tech offices, so places like Facebook, Twitter, Airbnb. And then towards the end of last year, we launched into 600 Holland & Barrett stores. So that was great and kind of gave us a bit of a sort of national distribution. Mm. Really nice. We'd had people kind of messaging us, being like, where can we get it? Where can we get it?
And now they can get it in many more places, which is great. Fantastic. And I guess the Holland & Barrett thing has, you know, is good in terms of the distribution. But does it also help in terms of positioning it as like a healthy alternative to a fizzy drink? And I guess it probably stands out in there a bit, where they don't have many other cans of fizzy anything.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something we've seen that once people understand what this product is, they tend to really like it. And our biggest challenge is just that education in terms of, yes, it is in a can and it is fizzy, but it is also healthy. Mm. We've seen, for example, in hospitals where they now have very strict guidelines on what sort of products they're allowed to stock. It's called the Sequin guidelines. We're pretty much the only canned drink that can be sold in hospitals. And so where we're in, the rate of sale is amazing.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Really exciting.
Because we did a bit of research into the sugar content of so many of the other drinks, and just to kind of put it in perspective, I've got a list here of about 10 or 15 or so, and they're talking about the amount of grams of sugar per 100 mil, and if you think of the size of a typical can, it's 330 mil, and we've got here at the top of the list, there's Old Jamaica Ginger Beer. Extra fiery ginger beer.
I was really surprised
about that
one.
Which is 15 grams of sugar per 100 mil.
And that's one of the drinks that I don't necessarily go for 7-Ups and Coca-Cola and things like that, because I think with Coca-Cola, you're always seeing Facebook videos, aren't you, with the sugar being extracted out and all of that, which is quite scary.
I mean, it's funny, until you kind of see it in these terms, it can be really hard to get your head around it. And, you know, it's one of those things, that, you know, that's one of the reasons I love doing this show so much, is that, you know, I'm starting to like question and challenge my own habits of, you know, I'll just pick up a can because it tastes good and it's what I've always done. And then you start thinking about it, this is crazy stuff, you know. So, you know, ginger beer with 15 grams, kind of coming down the list, you've got Mountain Dew at about 13, Cherry Coke at 11 grams of sugar, and a lot of the other colas are kind of around that thing as well. And then the lowest one on this list is 8.7 grams of sugar, which is a Lucozade. Which is funny because I always thought that was very, very sweet tasting.
When I was reading that, I thought that should be a lot higher. So I was quite surprised about that one.
Yeah, but some really interesting stuff. And, you know, and I guess this all kind of comes down to that the recent legislation change that they've had with the sugar tax. I can't quite remember if it's actually come into effect yet. I think it's coming into effect next year. Yeah. But it was sometime in well, it was kind of the middle of 2016 where they said, right, we're going to do this thing and it's going to be a tax levied at the producer end of the spectrum. So it's interesting that you guys launched before that really came into effect. But how has that affected you now, I guess?
Yeah,
not
we,
at all.
We launched in January and then the sugar tax was kind of first mentioned in March. And so the timing was great. We probably expected it to come at some point, but maybe not so soon. And I think the best thing when it was first mentioned is it just meant everyone was talking about it. Journalists were looking for things to write about, and then when they stumble across a brand called Ugly, it's you want to include an image of a drink called Ugly because it's different. So we've had some amazing coverage over the last 12 months, and the sugar tax has really helped that.
It's funny, isn't it, that it's helped you guys not only just because you've got a sugar-free drink, but the fact that everybody else's is so bad that you become the poster child for the sugar tax.
Yeah, I think, and it's more than anything, it's just about kind of stimulating dialogue. Everyone is now talking about sugar and ingredients in drinks, and that helps. Even if whatever your thoughts are on the actual tax, it's just a really kind of useful thing that everyone is now talking about. And seeing really big brands like Fanta now, which I think is the third biggest drinks brand in the UK, completely reformulating based on the sugar tax.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, for anybody who isn't familiar, the concept of the sugar tax is that for any soft drinks primarily that have got more than, I think it's more than 5% sugar per 100 mil, they're going to be taxed at the producer end. So it's a tax on the producer, not on the consumer. Although I guess, any consumers are probably going to pick up the tab eventually as everyone puts the prices up. I think it is going to be coming in from 2018. But it's really interesting that, this has come about. I mean, we saw a similar thing with the plastic bags thing that happened recently where they started charging everybody for the plastic bags. It's made a huge, huge impact, positive impact. And I wonder if we'll see a similar kind of thing with the sugar as well, because it is a huge problem. The number of children that have got issues with either dental issues or obesity issues, and sugar is a bit of a killer, isn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned the plastic bag tax. It's another kind of it also came into our thinking when we launched this, as bottled water's in such big growth, and clearly there are issues around plastic bottles, and I think the stats on cans versus plastic bottles, about 75% of the world's cans are recycled, versus sort of single digit plastic bottles. So we were much more comfortable kind of in that can space. And like you say, I think that the success of the plastic bag tax means, I'm sure at some point in the future, people will start looking at plastic bottles. We've seen in the UK, retailers like Selfridges have already banned water in plastic bottles.
Really?
And in the States, I think San Francisco have banned the sale of plastic bottles on all public property.
Really?
So really interesting, yeah.
Very interesting. I think I didn't read this, but I was told, I think over last weekend, someone was talking about how, I think it's Nigeria that have just banned plastic bags outright. So no more plastic bags over there. Very, very interesting move.
I'm just sitting there thinking, what would I do?
Who knows?
Yeah. So what's the next steps then with Ugly?
So we're currently based out of a little shipping container office in Elephant and Castle, and there's four of us, so myself and Hugh and then Bina and Orla, who have been with us from day one, and just kind of growing out the brand, particularly within London. We've got some kind of exciting news in the summer, so we're going to be launching.
Watch this space.
Yeah, going to be launching a couple of new flavors and just slightly tweaking things. And from that point, that'll be hopefully when we're really kicking on in terms of brand awareness and retailer listings. But we're excited as a drinks company. I think when the sun comes out, we get excited. And even this weekend, having had 24 hours of sunshine, it's amazing to see on social media how many people are picking up Ugly and posting it in the park. And yeah, the summer's always a fun time.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Absolutely fantastic. I noticed I was on your website earlier today, and I noticed that the company is actually called Ugly Brands Limited. Have you got plans to go outside of drinks at some point? Was that a strategic move?
No kind of particularly short-term plans to get outside of drinks. I think for us, it's just a case of you've got to have a holding company name. We're really focused on kind of canned sparkling waters for the kind of foreseeable future. We'd love to kind of expand the range and have more flavors and different formats, things like 6-packs and 12-packs, that kind of allow us to sell in different channels.
Because they're only single use at the moment, or single cans, are they?
Yeah, currently, yeah, we just do single cans and trays of 24. But yeah, going forward, really excited about that.
I think I might have to buy a 24-pack online.
How are you going to carry that home?
We do delivery. We've got a web shop. We've got a web shop, so you can go on the web shop and you can buy cases of 24 and we deliver them to your office, your home.
Home.
Yeah, home.
Not sharing.
Yeah. I've got loads of drinks in my back, don't worry. You guys are good.
Oh, that's fantastic. One of the other things that I have on my list of things to hear is that, you know, this idea of the healthier direction that a lot of the people that we talk to certainly seem to be going in. Do you think that is brands reacting to consumer behavior and consumer, you know, desires and needs and wants, or do you think the brands are actually driving forward that kind of transition away from, you know, the old big food classic stuff, which is, you know, processed and full of all sorts of crap?
I think it's a really interesting point for us. It's both, and it's a case, it's not that all trends point towards healthier, but I think it's about transparency. So I think people are sick and tired of having products marketed to them in a way that suggests they're healthy when they're just not. And people, you know, everyone likes a bit of indulgence sometimes, and that's fine as long as you know what you're getting yourself into. And so I think we're seeing really interesting brands and trends towards kind of, yeah, indulgent products, and we're also seeing clear trends towards healthier. I'm sure you guys have seen the kind of famous, at this point, Pepsi advert with Kendall Jenner.
Yeah.
I was so tempted to, I was so trying not to bring that up. But yeah, I did see it.
We just found it fascinating and the kind of fallout from it. And I think it just really shows at the moment that some of those bigger brands are struggling to really communicate with consumers in a way that cuts through. It was kind of, looking back on it and reading all the commentary on it, it just seemed like such a mistake.
Yeah.
Well, Twitter had a field day, didn't they? Our social media was definitely enjoying reading ads and tweets and things like that. But it was very...
Yeah. I always cover this stuff so late because I kind of intentionally try and stay away from mainstream media just because it just kind of gets me so angry. I'm sure, you know, I've said it in the past when Sue's always talking about our friend Donald, and it just kind of makes me so kind of frustrated that I have to stay away from it all.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was almost impossible to not see this Pepsi thing. And yeah, it's a real challenge to, you know, to communicate all of that stuff. And, you know, have a brand which is trying to do things, but do it in a way that is kind of comes across as honest and transparent. But it seems like you guys are doing a fantastic job of that. And not only because you can see through the water.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the plan. And it's our position has always been just, you know, full transparency. We are what we are. Maybe it's not for everyone, but hopefully even if you don't love the taste of this drink, you know, you love what we're trying to do. And, you know, we're really focused on expanding the range and making sure that we do have flavours and formats that work for everyone.
That's the thing. I just think it's an exciting brand, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good stuff.
The name, Ugly, just makes you think,
where did the name come from, just out of interest? Yeah.
Well, the joke is that we named it after my co-founder, Hugh, but That's probably unfair.
Yeah. That's why I didn't come today, was it?
Yeah, no, exactly. No, it was more just that we wanted a name that was challenging and that gave us that positioning to then have a bit of fun with it. And we always said we want to do this and with a sense of humour. We're not going to take things too seriously. We had loads of silly names that I definitely shouldn't say on air. and Ugly was the one that really kind of came through. And we didn't, at first, you know, we didn't even know quite why. We just liked it. And then over time, it just clearly became the name we wanted to run with. You know, the idea is that we just stand against so much of what's maybe out there, and we're trying to subvert things, do things differently, and it gives us that positioning.
Fantastic. Brilliant stuff. Right, we could talk about all this stuff all day, and I certainly have got my eye on some more of those wild chips. But before we wrap up, guys, if people want to find out more about you or buy your products, where can they go? Joe, let us know how they can get in touch with you, follow you, give you money, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we've got a website, which I mentioned has a web shop as well, so that's uglydrinks.com. And you'll find us on social media, just at Ugly Drinks across Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Or you can drop us an email at hello@uglydrinks.com.
Fantastic. Sophie, where can people find you?
Soffles.com, and then the same, the Instagram, Twitter, we're at Soffles Chips. And yeah, I think just on the website, you can see just how to get in touch with us there.
Fantastic. Perfect. And as always, you can find us online at foodtalk.co.uk.
Yeah. I did just want to say a big thank you to everyone. Our entries closed for our Food Talk Awards last week. And we've had some absolutely amazing
entries. We'll be sifting
entries
through those for a while.
So the judges are going to have a really good day of judging these lovely things. So thank you, everyone, for sending all of those in to us.
Fantastic. And thank you for everyone for being here today. And thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.